Welcome to Soundboard, the Steinway & Sons podcast on artistry and craftsmanship. I'm your producer and host, Ben Finan, Director of Content at Steinway. If you enjoy Soundboard, please rate, review, and subscribe to it wherever you pod your casts. My guest today is the 2010 Chopin International Piano Competition winner and Steinway artist, Yuliana Avdiva. She's here to discuss her most recent recording project for Pentatone, Dmitri Shostakovich's Preludes and Fugues, Opus 87. Yuliana, why don't we start with Shostakovich? Tell me what Shostakovich means to you.
I think it's a very interesting question, actually, because, let's say, my relationship to the music of Shostakovich is somehow I think, not really ordinary, because as a kid, I played quite many pieces by him, which he composed for his son originally, yes, for Maxim. These are quite simple pieces. For instance, the cycle called Dances of Dolls. There are very characteristical dances like, for instance, lyrical waltz, waltz scherzo, polka, this type of music. And it's full of very positive, very beautiful mood, yes? So for me, my first encounters with the music of Shostakovich were rather positive. So I thought actually that his music is always, I always thought a certain kind of joke, you know, something like this, but not, of course, I didn't know any other music by him. Being 5 or 6 years old, so it's, it was for me something very uplifting, very dancing-like. And of course, later on, I realized that actually this is a very rare side of his personality, of musical personality. And mostly he was composing rather tragic pieces, music, and of course, then I heard his symphonies. I think first was number 7, the Leningrad. Then I played also lots of chamber music by him, including both piano trios. Yeah, I just realized that his life was also not always full of sunshine. And so I made a curve learning about him and about his life and his music.
So it sounds to me like we're talking about a composer who went through different musical languages over the course of his career. Is that a fair thing to say?
Absolutely, because I have to be very honest that I'm absolutely in love with his so-called avant-garde period, composing period. He was very young by then, around 20, as he suddenly, I think also maybe kind of, you know, was a protest against the traditional music language he was taught at the conservatory. So, for instance, pieces like the first piano sonata or the opera Nose, Fourth Symphony, these are the pieces which are composed in absolutely avant-garde style. They have no key. They are very radical in their musical language. So you do not actually recognize that this is Shostakovich. You only know his music starting, let's say, from late 30s, 40s, and of course later. And this time of his work was absolutely unique, I think. Somehow he then decided, well, of course, probably also because of the political pressure, he decided to go more, let's say, more traditional orthodox. But this period between, let's say, 1926 and 1932, 33 is absolutely outstanding.
Let's return to the Preludes and Fugues. What sort of language, musical language, would you say this work occupies in Shostakovich's oeuvre?
For me, it's indeed a very unique opus because, in a way, maybe because he was not commissioned, he was not obliged to compose it. So it was his personal will after he visited the city of Leipzig in 1950. The city of Leipzig was holding a festival connected with the 200 years since the passing of Johann Sebastian Bach. And there was a big festival, and Shostakovich was invited, and also he was a part of the jury of the first Bach competition. And there was a young lady, Tatiana Nikolaeva, who won the competition, and he was so impressed by her playing and also by listening to a lot of music by Johann Sebastian Bach that somehow he decided that he would like to express himself also in this very specific, very serious genre, like Prelude and Fugue. He composed the cycle very quick, so it was, I think, within 5 months where he was really ready with it. and Nikolaeva premiered it. But in any case, what is interesting for me personally is that we have here so many different masks, 24 preludes plus 24 fugues, so it's 48 masks or characters or personalities. Each of these personalities is very unique, and probably, I think, they, let's say, express a certain side of Shostakovich's personality or his mood at a certain moment. And for me, it is a very direct music. It's not, for me personally, it's not overloaded with the virtuosic playing. Maybe it's a paradox what I'm saying, but some of the fugues are extremely difficult. Well, fugue is basically one of the highest, how should I say, highest degrees. Yes, I mean, because also pianistically, because you have many voices which you have to still somehow control, not forgetting that the subject of the fugue is still the most important element of the fugue. But however, if he writes virtuosic elements in this cycle, they are, it's on purpose. It's not just, you know, to show off or something. It doesn't have this very heavy, let's say, orchestral sound, like in the ending of some symphonies, like finale of the symphony number 5, 7. So it's a very direct, very honest, in my opinion, language, musical language. That's why I literally adore this cycle, because it shows us Shostakovich in a very, very real way, in my opinion.
You talked about fugues and the importance of tracking all of these different voices, depending, of course, how many voices each fugue has. And we have to, of course, think of Bach's preludes and fugues as these pieces were built on his foundation and sort of modeled in that image. What do you hear of Bach and Shostakovich in this piece, and where do you feel he made departures?
It's funny, because I think that preludes, for especially starting from the number one, the C major prelude, the opening of this prelude, it's also 5 notes, like in the Bach Welttemper Klavier number 1 C major prelude. It's even the same 5 tones which Bach is using for his prelude. So this is definitely, I think, that Shostakovich made it on purpose, that it's a kind of greeting Bach from 2 centuries later. Some of the preludes or some fugues have definitely some kind of Baroque connection, especially in the dances. Like we can find some one Jig in G major fugue, we can find a Passacaglia or Chaconne in the G sharp minor prelude. So there definitely some pieces are connected with the Baroque time. But I would still say that it's, besides, of course, the fact that the fugue, and of course that the subject of a fugue is always, let's say, reduced at the moment, in the beginning, reduced on several notes, right? I think that Shostakovich definitely composed his own music. It's not really, anyhow, for me, stands in the shadow of Bach. It's a really independent cycle.
As you were working on these pieces, which I imagine it takes a long time to really get inside, what discoveries did you make along the way as you were working your way through this?
For me, it was an extremely valuable experience, because, as you say, it took me a long time and very intensive work to learn this cycle. Prelude and fugue, that's why I call it a pair. Some pairs were not so accessible to me as some others were. So it means that it took a longer time for some preludes and fugues to find a feeling for them or find an understanding for them. But at the end, I have to say, well, this moment came after a certain amount of practice hours. This moment made me very happy. That was the moment when I understood that I love all 24 pairs equally. I don't divide them anymore, you know, into pairs which I love more, which I prefer, and the other ones, they were all each of the pairs. Every single note was very dear to me and equally loved. And that was a very beautiful, beautiful moment for me.
So this is interesting because you're talking about these moments of epiphany that occur after a lot of practice, where I think maybe you unlock a next level in the music. I know this is a hard thing to quantify, but what is it that you break through, and what is it that you realize when something like that happens after hours of practice? And what is it that you have to practice to lead you to this next level?
Good question. Well, I think, first of all, as I was already mentioning, but not only fugues are technically difficult, some preludes are also extremely hard to play. So I would say to be able to express or to find my own expression in music, first of all, I have to still be able to more or less to play technically on a level where I can express myself. Because if you have a very complicated fugue, for instance, and my brain is absolutely occupied only with the, let's say, technical things, how I manage to bring, let's say, the inner voice. If I have a four parts fugue and I have a subject in the, let's say, in the alto, so in the middle voice, and at the same time I have other three voices playing very quick with big jumps, as long as my brain is occupied with these problems, it's very difficult to find the musical expression. So first of all, I have to bring my practice or my performance onto a level where my brain is no longer thinking of these kind of technical things. Because when I manage this, when I, as you say, unlock this new level, then I can concentrate actually on the core, on the musical message. And with some pairs, pianistically a little bit more simple, other are more complicated. But sometimes also the simple ones are not very logical in a way. Although Shostakovich was a brilliant pianist himself, somehow this cycle, and I also talked with Krzysztof Meyer, who was his good friend and biographer, apparently Shostakovich composed 24 preludes and fugues without piano. Mm. And sometimes I can literally feel it, because in some fugues, for instance, in the pre-last one, in the F major, in the fugue, we have distance of three octaves between two octaves, between the bass line and the middle voice, and two octaves between the middle voice and the upper voice. So it means that I cannot play them together. I mean, and two of these voices simultaneously having the subject. And apparently he literally did not think of any instrument here. He was just expressing himself. And this is also what requires time to find solutions.
Yes.
Let's say musical solutions which would not disturb the idea. Yeah. For instance, the line or the subject or whatever. So sometimes it's some spots took really very long time to find good solutions.
Thank you. You've brought up two ideas that I keep hearing from artists and pianists. Let's take the second, since you just said it, and that is, as a composer, it's often great to compose away from the instrument because you don't get locked into muscle memory, right? Or patterns that you're used to. But when you write with no practicality in mind, then the performer, in this case yourself, is faced with difficult choices, which is, okay, I cannot physically play this, right, to the wishes of the composer. So I have to make a decision here. I have to make a decision as to what is going to keep the through line going, right?
Basically, yes. Of course, I have to make a decision, or I have to make a choice, my musical choice, what, or a kind of compromise. Let's say compromise. Compromise between the original composer's idea, which he left us in the score, and between the realistic execution of what is written in the score.
Right. And then to your first point, we have this music in front of us and we're learning it and we're learning it and we're learning it. And then it's only, like you said, when we get to the level where the actual playing of the notes, say, becomes like drinking water, right? Where you can just do it.
Yes.
And it's only then that you can focus on that next level of musicality, which is, okay, I have these four voices here. Here's the melody. This one takes over here. This one takes over here. I can only pay attention to that if I'm not worried about what these clusters are under my hands. It's in the same way that, you know, an actor learns the script. And then the script is such a part of what he's doing that he can then tackle larger issues of character. He can then not only speak the lines that his character is speaking, but he can think thoughts behind those lines, which gives it a real impact. And I think that maybe that's what you're speaking about here, is the thoughts behind these musical lines.
Yes, absolutely. Because it's in the end, the piece, if when I perform it on stage, in a way, maybe it sounds a little bit arrogant, but that's not how I mean it. In the end, when I perform a piece, it is, in a way, I'm co-composing the piece I perform. It becomes a part of my body, of my soul, of myself, because then it is a personal, really individual interpretation. I'm just not only reproducing the notes. It's my personal vision, musical vision of the music which I learned. And for that, it also takes time. That indeed, that as you say, I can find these lines behind the text and in a way to make them be my own, because then it's more authentic, in my opinion. It's just rather than just reproducing the music score.
You mentioned how you become a proud parent of all these couplets of preludes and fugues. I wonder how else your relationship changed with the preludes and fugues as you continued to learn it and study it and breathe it.
I think that my vision of Shostakovich as a personality and as a composer is now much richer than it used to be, because, of course, first of all, through the symphonies, I had a very, let's say, certain vision of Shostakovich's music, in the sense that, yeah, it has this always this grand sound, sometimes basically more darker music in the character. And in through this cycle, I realized that Shostakovich was indeed much more than just these sides which I have just described. He had some very happy moments where he joked a lot in some when he was, let's say, in a safe society with the people he knew well and he could trust. He was also sometimes very sad. He was depressed. So he had all these, let's say, other human sides, which are maybe sometimes are not always, in my opinion, heard in the symphonies. Shostakovich, basically, for me, he remains a mystery because, you know, there are so many rumors around him, around his personality. We don't actually know what kind of person he was, because we have some descriptions, some very different descriptions of him. And although he passed away only 50 years ago, I think we know about Chopin even more than we know about Shostakovich, how he was, what he was thinking, how he was feeling. But the 24 Preludes and Fugues gave me this feeling that I came a little bit closer to the personality of Shostakovich. And this personality had so great variety in his soul. And it's, for me, a fantastic moment to learn the cycle.
You've been listening to Soundboard, the Steinway & Sons podcast on artistry and craftsmanship. We heard clips from Steinway artist Yuliana Avdiva performing Shostakovich's Preludes and Fugues, Opus 87, including the C major prelude, E minor fugue, and F major fugue, all on pentatone. Our closing music is the A flat major prelude from the same recording. Our opening music is Philip Glass's Mad Rush on a Steinway Model M, played by me, Ben Finan. Question for the podcast? Email me at info@steinway.com with the subject heading Soundboard, message me on Facebook at Steinway, or hit me on the gram at Steinway & Sons. Subscribe to Soundboard on Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, or wherever you pod your casts. Thank you for listening.